Chapter 17, The Jewish Flight. At the beginning of May 1945, an 18-year-old Polish Jew named Roman Halter was liberated by the Russians. He and two other Jews had been hiding with a German couple near Dresden, who had taken them in after they escaped from a death march. Recall what Miklos said? We climbed into the cars and, after an all-night wait, began to move. The trip lasted 5 days. I didn't count the number of comrades who froze to death, but only 1,500 of us reached our destination, the Mauthausen Katzet. Some of the missing 500 were not dead, however, for there were a few who, taking advantage of a propitious occasion, fled the convoy and perhaps escaped. That's from chapter 36 of the book Auschwitz, A Doctor's Eyewitness Account. Now, we will shortly be listening to the words of one of them who did, in fact, escape. Continuing with Mr. Lowe. Having survived various labor camps, including Auschwitz, Roman Halter was weak and emaciated, but he was alive and knew himself to be extremely lucky. The day after his liberation, Halter said goodbye to the couple who had sheltered him. He wanted desperately to find out if anyone else in his family had survived the Holocaust. So he acquired himself a bicycle, tied to the handlebars a few jars of preserved meat that he had found in a deserted farmstead, and set off on the road back to Poland. He had not been traveling long when he came across one of his Russian liberators, who was driving a motorbike. Halter was enormously grateful to the Russians for rescuing him. He thought of them as friends to the Jews, liberators, good people. He even spoke a little Russian himself, which he still remembered from his childhood. Unfortunately, as he would find out, his fraternal feelings were not reciprocated. Quote, from Roman Halter. I was pleased to see him. I still remembered the Russian words which I had learned from my parents. Ruski, ja si lublu, I said. Russian, I love you. And then added, Drazdvi dvorst, hello, friend. He looked at me strangely and began speaking Russian very fast. I smiled and said in Polish that I was unable to understand him. He looked me up and down. Then he looked at my bike and said, Dawaj Zasi, give me watches. I understood that. He pulled up his shirt sleeves and showed me his forearms full of watches, and then repeated the two words again. Dawaj Zasi. I glanced at his eyes. They were stern and cold. I began speaking to him in Polish. I said that I hadn't got watches and showed him both my thin forearms. He pointed to the bulging blanket fixed to my bike's crossbar and said something in Russian. I went up and took out one jar and handed it to him. Mieso, I said, Tvarsk, Mieso, comrade, meat. The meat was visible through the glass. He looked at it, and then at me. Tvarisk, have it. Please take it and enjoy it. Tvarisk, you have it. Please take it and enjoy it. He lifted the glass jar and held it above his head for a second or two, and then smashed it on the ground. The glass and the meat spattered in all directions. I looked at the Russian soldier and fear entered my heart. What could I say to make him leave me alone? I felt momentarily numb. Lower your trousers, he said in his language. I stood there shaken and didn't know quite what he meant. He repeated his command, and by gestures showed me what he wanted me to do. I put my bike carefully on the ground so as not to break the glass jars in the pouch and began lowering my trousers. Why is he making me do this? I thought. Perhaps he thinks that I carry a belt with watches around my waist. I must tell him that I'm not a German who just speaks Polish. So as I was lowering my trousers and showing him that I am without belt or watches around my waist, I slowly told him in Polish that I am a Jew. I knew the word. Ivre, ja Ivre, I repeated. Ja Ivre, ja Toris. I am a Jew. I am a comrade. I stood before him now naked, from my waist down. Although my instinct told me to not take off my good lace-up boots, in case he took them and left me barefooted. I could not reach Chodesk barefooted, so I let my trousers and pants hang over my socks and boots. I glanced at his eyes again. There was a look of contempt in them, as he was viewing the exposed part of my body. I saw in them a killer's void. He took out his revolver from his holster, pointed at my head, and pulled the trigger. There was a loud click. Without a word to me, he kick-started his motorbike and drove off. I stood there for a time, with my trousers and pants down, and looked at him, disappearing into the distance. And that's from Roman Halter, included in the book by Martin Gilbert called The Boys. Continuing with Mr. Lowe. The memory of that meeting would haunt Halter for the rest of his life. Its meaning was ominous. Despite their shared experience as victims of the Germans, and despite Halter's spontaneous offer of friendship, this nameless Russian had treated him exactly as an SS officer might have done. First establishing that he was Jewish by checking to see if he was circumcised, and then putting a gun to his head. Whether Halter's life had been saved by the gun jamming or merely a lack of ammunition, he would never know. In the months to come, such scenes would be repeated across Europe. Jews of all nationalities would discover that the end of German rule did not mean the end of persecution. Far from it. Despite all that the Jews had suffered, in many areas anti-Semitism would increase after the war. Violence against Jews would resurface everywhere, even in places that had never been occupied, such as Britain. In some parts of Europe, this violence would be final and definitive. The task of permanently clearing their communities of Jews, which even the Nazis had failed to do, would be finished off by local people.